ganzheitlich heilen auf Irisch. Dr. Karen Ward im Gespräch. Willkommen zu einer neuen Folge von Erlebnis Irland, in dem wir Irland mit allen Sinnen genießen, durch Geschichten, Begegnungen und besondere Orte. Heute nehmen wir euch mit auf eine ganz besondere Reise. Eine Reise nach innen, aber auch tief hinein in das alte spirituelle Herz Irlands. Fee hat auf unserer letzten Recherchereise Dr. Karen Ward getroffen. Psychotherapeutin, Autorin, aber auch Schamanin und Gründerin des Frauenkreises Moon Na. In unserer Unterkunft in Elihis erzählt sie von ihrem Weg, von der Umweltberaterin zur spirituellen Heilerin, von den keltischen Wurzeln ihrer Arbeit, von Ritualen, Kreisen und dem Einfluss des Mondes auf ihr Leben. Dieses Gespräch ist kein bis...
Hello, good morning. I'm sitting here together with Karen Ward. And Karen is a very interesting person because Karen knows a lot about nature and she knows a lot about healing. And we are lucky that she is at Beara at the moment so that we can have a chat.
Thank you very much, Felicitas. It is an honor and a pleasure to be here, especially speaking about this beloved land of Ireland.
So Karen is telling us something about nature and plants and why they are so important to Ireland. So what is your favorite Irish plant and why?
That's a really difficult question because there are so many. But I think I have a really special connection with the oak trees and the hawthorn trees. And then I think plant-wise, it would be very much the... I know this sounds a little bit cheesy, but the shamrock has a part of my heart. The reason for the oak tree is, in Irish Gaelic, it's dhira. And dhira is the etymology of the word dhri, which means magic. And it goes back to the name of the Druids. And the oak tree very much symbolizes strength, resilience, because, as you know, the oak tree from a tiny little acorn becomes this mighty tree that is there for many, many years. And for the Druids, it was a sacred tree. And it is said that in the natural world, the oak tree has the most inhabitants from bird and insect life. And even when the trees eventually die, their life cycle is over, if they lie in the forest, they discovered that they still are host to this myriad of plant and animal life. And the difference between the oak, which is one of my favourites, and the hawthorn. So the hawthorn tree is a small, quite gnarled tree. It produces beautiful milky white flowers in May and fantastic red, red berries in September. But it is, from our history, from our anthropology and folklore-wise, it's the portal and the home of the fairies. Now, some of your listeners might be smiling and thinking, where is she going with this? But folklore, and even today in modern world, we Irish keep a very strong sense close to our hearts of the other world, of the unseen. And there's an interesting phenomenon that any tourist will see today, that the hawthorns tend to be the hedges, they border fields. Mm-hmm. But every so often when you're driving around Ireland, including Dublin, you'll see this quite unusual small gnarled tree in the middle of a forest or in the middle of a field or even at the side of a playing pitch, clearly not cut down, not tampered with. And you might think, how come there's forests over there and there's hedgerows there, but this one tree is on its own? So somebody in a modern world has consciously made a decision not to cut down this tree because you do not mess with the fairies.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a very famous interview on Irish radio a few years ago. And quite a well-known presenter was talking to a farmer from around the Bear Peninsula area. And he said to this old farmer, "And do you believe in fairies?" And the farmer said, "Indeed, and I don't. But I'll tell you something. I wouldn't be cutting down a hawthorn tree because they'll mess with you." And of course, that said it all. I'm not going to consciously admit that I believe in fairies, but at the same time, I come in with the gorgeous superstitions and the old ways of being. So oak and hawthorn are very different trees, but are dear to my heart. And then finally, the shamrock. It's a small, it's a three-leaved trefoil plant. It's very much a symbol of Ireland. And I really love the three in one because it speaks so much of the spirituality of Ireland. If we think of the maiden, the mother and the crone, the three phases of a woman's life, then you have the boy, the father and the sage, the three phases of a man's life. And of course, the sun, the moon, the earth. I could go on. The three connection, it's a sacred word, a sacred number of the spiritual people of this island. So here's this tiny little plant that really speaks of that, but also the greenness of the land.
Yeah, it really has a lovely color and normally doesn't stand alone. That's also a nice thing, isn't it?
Yes, and I really like the way you have to look for shamrock. They're not that obvious. They're not wildly colorful. They're green. So you have to search among the hedgerows or on the grass, should I say, to look for one. There has been a tradition for many years that on St. Patrick's Day, people wear shamrock. And even in our modern world, the Irish Taoiseach, which would be the equivalent of our Prime Minister, presents a bowl of shamrock to, for example, the American president on this particular day. And many people might smile and think, really, what's that about? But it speaks of the pride we have, not just in this tiny little island off the west coast of Europe, but also in nature, in our connection, our deep ways of being with nature.
And in your job, you also have to deal with nature a lot. So you're here in Beara because of your job that is strictly or strongly related to nature.
Yes, very much so. So I am an Irish Celtic shaman. Myself and my husband, John Cantwell, we have a school of Irish Celtic shamanism. And that is an evolution of the old ways, the druidic ways forward in a modern context. For example, next week there are a group of Americans coming to Ireland, to Beara, and we will take them to the sacred sites. So the Deirnathaggart Stone Circle, just outside Castletown Bear. There's a couple of dolmens on the cliff walk outside Alahees. The Hag of Beara Stone, sure. Yes, very important. And opposite, the Ballycrovane Ohm Stone, which has a fairly phallic look about it. So that would be considered the male equivalent. And then we have the Hag of Beara Stone. And there's a French group coming in a few months. There's another American group. And it really warms our hearts to see the interest that people have now from around the world, not just in coming to Ireland and it's a green country and yes, there's not that many inhabitants here, but more for not just the history, but the astrology and astronomy and archaeology aspect of it. So in other words, what is the heritage of the people who lived here? And because we are an island off the west coast, we didn't see the world wars. We didn't see, yes, we had famine and we had church abuse, but we didn't have a Roman invasion. So therefore, the old ways have been preserved and interestingly and most importantly preserved in the land, so that if you come with an open heart, with a sense of unconditional love and you sit on the land,
you can feel it.
The wisdom is revealed. Yes.
I think the hag is especially important because it's a stone that is quite different from the surrounding, isn't it?
Very much so. And the hag or the crone, the wise old woman, is again a motif that you see throughout Ireland, Slievegullion up the north, Slieve na Cailí in Westmeath. And these are places synonymous with the wisdom of the wise old woman. And particularly at the age I'm at now, I really appreciate that in a society that reveres youth so much, that we have an appreciation of this wisdom of our elders. In other words, the life experience that we have lived has a deep meaning for how we live our lives today. And there is a respect for that, which is really important.
You can see that by looking at stones that are having an age of over millions of years and staying there and be also looked at with a feeling of happiness and a feeling of sacral intuition?
Very much so. I was originally a scientist, a microbiologist, and I have brought my shamanic studies. I'm also a psychotherapist, mm-hmm. so I brought that to my doctoral studies. And at a very basic level, if you sit by one of these sacred sites, these stones, we'll take the hag stone, and if you are quiet in yourself and let the hustle and bustle of the day in your mind drift away and come down to your heart, if you come at that level, there will be intuitive ideas or impulses or creative burst of energy. There will be a sense of that wisdom of the land being revealed to you. And it's that simple, but it's that hard. I like to use an analogy with people like myself who hug trees. Mm-hmm. And there are those, naturally enough, who think, oh, tree huggers.
Mounting.
There you go. However, on a scientific level, I breathe in oxygen to give me life and I breathe out carbon dioxide as a waste product. The tree breathes in carbon dioxide to give it life and breathes out carbon oxygen as its waste product. So therefore, we have a symbiotic relationship. If I sit or hug a tree, I am getting fresh oxygen. I'm going to feel renewed and energized, and so will the tree at a very basic level. And similarly, these sacred sites, for somebody who might understand acupuncture or Tai Chi or yoga, they are the energy meridian points in this land. So if you think of the whole island containing life in the form of energy, the sacred sites are the nodes that feed these energy lines. Therefore, when you sit in these places, there is very much a sense of rejuvenation. But also whatever is going on in your head, whatever is, will inevitably dissipate, or you might get a particular insight that you weren't aware of before.
We have a visitor at the moment. Hi. You don't want to say anything. Okay.
Hello, little visitor.
Especially because we're close to the Skelligs. I think Skellig Michael is one of the points. And then the line kind of, they say, goes Biera and I think through to the pyramids, no?
Yes, the Skelligs are very, very potent. If we talk about the sacred sites of nodes, this is a major one. And there are two Skellig islands. One was inhabited by the monks for many years. And the second one, which is close by, is inhabited by birds. And that one is almost a sense of an anchor for the one that was inhabited. I am a self-confessed Star Wars geek. Absolutely. I mean, it was the hero's journey back in the day with Luke Skywalker. And then, of course, it became the heroine's journey as the story evolved. And many people didn't realise that George Lucas worked with the famous mythologist Joseph Campbell,
okay,
who came from shamanic sensibilities. and that each of the planets that Star Wars, they would go to, mm-hmm. were filmed beside a major sacred site in the world. Many in the Middle Eastern. Think of Tatooine, you know, these kind of desert-like planets. And when eventually in the story they want to go to the source of the Force. Now, the Force in Star Wars is the transpersonal. It's spirit, God, goddess, whatever you want to call it. And of course, where in the entire planet Earth is the source of the Force? Skellig Michael. There were many of us that smiled and went, ah, yeah, that's it. They're well clued in. George Lucas, the man who he's basically Mr. Star Wars. I mentioned acupuncture, which is a good analogy because the ley lines, these energy lines that emanate from sacred sites, particularly in the Skelligs, are of vital importance. And colonizers from way back recognized this, and they would siphon off energy from the country they colonized. And that's a little known fact. And again, in the world we live in today, there are those who would be aware of that and would protect the sacred sites in Ireland, certainly so. But from Skellig Michael, there are four energy lines. The two that have been studied most would be called the Apollo and the Athena line. So a god and goddess, you know, we're thinking of, you know, Greek and Roman times. And the lines are like DNA spirals. So they come from the Skelligs. The female one, interesting enough, comes across here in Alahees, hits land in Alahees.
Copper.
Yes, goes right up, comes over at, there's two dolmens on the cliff, down Ballydonegan Beach, up over Barnes Pass, over to the dolmen on the other side, back to sea, and then comes to land at the Golene Peninsula, whereas the male line is out at sea. And they intersect again at St. Michael's Mount in Cornwall, then Mont Saint-Michel in France. They go down to Chartres Cathedral, then through Italy. And the places that they connect in Italy are where St. Francis and St. Clare, St. Benedict and St. Scholastica, his sister, and Padre Pio. So there's three down the length of Italy, and three major saints, couples, came out of that era. Then they go to Greece, where all there were various temples, but they finish at Mount Carmel, in what would now be Israel. Now, I would be curious as to where did, if these started at the Skelligs, is that the origin or the famous, the lost island of Atlantis? I mean, we are surrounded by the Atlantic Ocean on three sides here in Ireland. And if we subscribe to the lost island of Atlantis, this incredible culture that was lost, I would wonder, where did all that wisdom go? And is the nearest landmass Ireland? Mm-hmm. Possibly. We have a lot of myth and legend about High Brazel, this fabled island off the west coast of Ireland. So might that have been Atlantis? Will we ever know? So therefore, the Skelligs are a really important central point. And if you've ever been...
Once, but it was so beautiful.
But you can really feel it.
Yeah.
It is so, so special. And there are people who go there and they go, well, it's an island, there's a lot of steps, there's a few birds. Yeah, okay. But it's coming from a heart place. That is the key to the whole thing. In fact, that's the key to understanding any of the sacred sites here. I mean, you can be looking at a heap of stones and think, oh, what's that? And then you hear, well, it was a dolmen, three legs and a capstone, and it's fallen now. Yeah, it doesn't look very exciting. But if you sit, if you come to a place of contemplation, meditation, then the secrets are revealed. It's as though the sites are sussing out these humans going, are you worthy of hearing my secrets?
You have to stand and stay still.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, there are two other ley lines that come out of the Skelligs, and they would be known as the Arrigid, meaning silver, and Orr, meaning gold. And they again, like a DNA helix, they snake up Ireland and they come past the sacred sites, particularly in the centre, the Hill of Uisneach. They encompass the Hill of Tara, Newgrange, on the west coast and right up to the north. And some would say, you know, do they go to the Scandinavian? How far up do they go? So you can subscribe to this theory and go, oh, that sounds fascinating. Or most importantly, you can come and you can sit and you can feel it.
So it's I think, all about magnetism, isn't it? Kind of.
Yes, there's it's energy. So magnetism fits into that. It's opposites attracting, if you think of a pair of magnets coming together. And think of a sister sacred site, say Glastonbury or Avebury over in England. They would be places with crop circles. And of course, there's a lot, great controversy over crop circles. Do they exist? Are they natural? Are they man-made? But it's very interesting. If you have a Bowron drum, people would be familiar with the Irish drums. And if you opened a tea bag and put loose tea on the drum and you bring it to your lips and you hum or chant, the vibration, the tea leaves will move around. But if you're beside a sacred site, what happens is the tea leaves begin to form the carvings on the wall or a circle, or it's not just random. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit like with like that Japanese man who did the experiments with water. He blessed water.
Emoto,
yeah. He blessed the water and then he looked at them in a microscope and saw these magnificent snowflake-like sculptures. So similar, think of the Fibonacci number. Mm-hmm. I mean, we could look out the window and see ferns unfurling, and they have that that spiral, which is hugely synonymous with Irish, the culture and heritage of our foremothers and forefathers. Think of the triple spiral mm-hmm. carved into the front stone at Newgrange. Yeah. We have double spirals, single spirals. And it speaks of our version of the Native Americans, the sacred hoop, or many cultures have the circle of life. But the spiral is more nuanced, because if you think, we spiral inwards, but then at the same time, there's a spiral outwards. And the concept of paradox was very much to the fore in ancient times in Ireland. And it's holding two seemingly opposite concepts at the same time. You know, the most basic, love, hate. You can love your partner or your children with a passion, and the next moment you feel like strangling them. Yeah. And it seems like, whoa, what happened there? So that intensity of emotion. Mm-hmm. And I think it's quite handy in the world we live in to be able to see another person's viewpoint and to hold those two seemingly contradictory aspects at the same time.
So how did you become a Druid?
That's a good question. Well, I was the child who played with the fairies at the bottom of her grandmother's garden and thought this was completely natural, until I went to school and realised, oh, not everybody thinks like I do. And it was not the wisest way to speak to my fellow schoolmates, who might think I'm a bit strange or didn't have a comprehension of that. So I had a vivid imagination. I'm a voracious reader. I definitely got that from my granddad, Frank, and my mother and my aunt. But when I left school, I studied science. And to a certain extent, that fed into my logical, practical brain. But it knocked out the esoteric, the creative, intuitive side. So it wasn't until I was in my early 30s that the holistic world really called to me. At that stage, I lived in London. I had a very exciting job in marketing PR company, and I was dealing with like big clients. And one day I was in the boardroom of Kellogg's in Manchester, and we were discussing this multi-million dollar deal about what widget was going to go into Kellogg's Frosties, these sugary. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I had a blinding flash of light, and I realised nobody's going to die if some child does not get their Tony the Tiger widget mm-hmm. in this. Now, I'm not taking away from Kellogg's, and everybody needs a treat now and again, but I realised my calling in life is different. Mm-hmm. And I surprised a lot of people by giving up that. Yoga was a hobby or an interest. I learned to teach it. I became an aromatherapist, a reflexologist, a herbalist, and then Reiki mm-hmm. came. So I suppose with the yoga, the reflexology, and the aromatherapy, that was the body. Mm-hmm. The psychotherapy brought in the mind, but the Reiki really introduced the energetic, the soul.
The energetic healing.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, myself and my husband, when we met down here in the Bear, and he also had these very much spiritual sensibilities. And when we wanted to, bring our union to be witnessed by family and friends, we had no nuns or priests in the family. So we asked two holistic therapists we knew. And interestingly enough, they didn't know each other, but they both had this something extra. And we couldn't put our finger on it. And of course, it was the shamanism, the druidry. And after our wedding ceremony, Maura Clesham, who was the woman, Gary Collins, the man, she said, "My shamanic teacher is coming to Ireland. I think you should study with them." It was Alberto Villaldo, the Cuban-American anthropologist. And instantly I thought, yes, yes. But surprisingly, my husband, John, went, "Oh, I'd like to do that." Now, this was a man running a very successful, he had the Irish Film Actors Academy. This was his company. Mm-hmm. And he was wildly successful with it. And I felt a bit, oh, I thought there was only one holistic therapist in this family. And it wasn't a learning, it was a remembering. Mm-hmm. This went to the core of who I am. It was in my bones. And I remember vividly the class was in the Irish Centre for Shamanic Studies. I'd never heard of it before. There was 90 people from around the world, 25 Irish. And the American teachers, before we even started the class, honed in on myself and John and said, "Would you come and teach with us?" And we were really surprised because we hadn't even started the classes. But they recognised something innate within us. It was always there.
Empty.
This was coming forward. Mm-hmm. And I remember so vividly, we were learning the classics, soul retrieval, extraction work, psychopomp work. But while they were even teaching us, I had a flood of, I knew this work, but I hadn't learned it this lifetime. Mm-hmm. It was there waiting to be revealed. And I have to say, we've never looked back. And also, this training went on over 2 years. And both John and I felt, this is amazing. But this is South American, very much a Peruvian Incan path. What is on this island? And of course, we began to explore by sitting on the land, but also copious research of the ancient texts. And my name is Karen Ward, Nikon Bard. So I'm the daughter of a bard, the storytellers. Mm-hmm. And one of the three strands of Druidry is the bardic strand. Mm-hmm. So John's family, he's Sean de Cantul, which would have come from the Normans, through North France, Normandy. But his mother's people are Naharoctuk. They're the Harringtons. Mm-hmm. Again, very much of this part of Cork. And they're the assembly makers. They're the people who gathered mm-hmm. the people, specifically at the Celtic festivals. So this was a match made in heaven. And we've never looked back. It was so natural to us. And What's interesting is what we teach, what's called sober shamanism. Plant medicine is a part of shamanism. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it's much maligned because you do get people who want to take mushrooms or ayahuasca or various plant medicines for the thrill of it, not recognizing these are very powerful plants. But it was interesting. We naturally went down the breath work route, as in everything you need is within your physical body. You don't need anything else.
You produce the chemicals by yourself.
There you go. Now, that's not taken away from plant medicine, which is very valid, and we completely respect those who come to that path. And even the drums and the rattles, I mean, your heartbeat, there's the drum. You don't have to go much further.
And the rattles?
And the rattles, again, it's what's called white noise. It brings the brain to, it distracts your brain while your heart is listening to the land. What was fascinating during my doctoral studies, which involved three major Irish universities, DCU, Dublin City University, UCD, the University College Dublin, and then Trinity, Trinity College Dublin. I realised that not only does this work, shall we say, I'll use that word, for people who are, we often use the expression well off for space, or people who have done the work. In other words, those who have soul searched and who have come to an understanding of spiritual ways. But I've often had clients who come in the door and they're regular people. They have a yearning, they're seeking something, but they don't know an awful lot about it. But the particular, we call it the energy therapy technique that I'm laughing as I say, I evolved. spirit, the powers that be, the transpersonal decided, ooh, you sound like a person who could deal with this, and it was revealed to me.
Yeah, because it goes in your speed.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So this this particular technique that I was open to intuitively hearing how it works, it evolves the ancient Irish Celtic shamanic druidic ways into a modern context to be used within a psychotherapeutic counselling session. So just as you and I are sitting opposite each other, in 40 minutes, I can lead you with a little bit of breath work into your interiority to help with whatever is required for you to deal with a particular issue.
To open up kind of like an onion, like one part.
Yes. That's a good analogy. So you're revealing, peeling off the layers of an onion. And that might be, if you're dealing with something in life, you might need to release an old hurt or grievance. You might need to call back an essential part of you that has been knocked out of alignment. Mm-hmm. Or you might need to, say it was complicated grief, it might be to assist in a most loving way a beloved grandmother go towards the light. Mm-hmm. That would be a euphemism that's used. And I was really surprised that at an academic level, particularly interesting enough, through the nursing fraternity, because they're dealing with life, birth and death every day. They, at an academic level, were very open to bringing spirituality into the major universities. Mm-hmm. And also the therapists that I worked with that came to me to learn this were really open to these, you know, quite esoteric spiritual ways. So they often say, if you scratch the surface in Ireland, spirituality is so there. You're talking to somebody walking down the road, you randomly meet somebody in a tea house, and inevitably that conversation will happen because it's so there. In fact, Alberto Villaldo, who came that time, the classes were usually 6 days, and he actually admitted after 4.5 days, he said, I've used all the material. Now, the 90 people in the class were, oh, that's a bit honest. And the reason was he wanted to teach us about fire ceremony. And we Irish went, oh, Samhain, Halloween bonfires. Yeah, yeah, we know that. And then he went, oh, okay. Now I'll teach you water ceremony. Oh, the holy wells. Yeah, yeah, we know all about the holy wells. So it was there all along. In fact,
it had different terminology probably, but it was there.
Yes, yes. And of course, we were nearly more surprised than he was. And again, we realized, why did we have to wait for somebody from abroad to come over to highlight what was already there? And of course, that's often the way with humanity. We don't appreciate what we have until either it's gone or somebody else recognizes it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's because you have lots of holy wells here. And we went to Knock last year, and there was also lots of good energy there. And the holy well there is also very famous for helping people in need.
Yes, yes. The Marian Shrine. And so Knock would have been where the Mother Mary was revealed to these parishioners, and a little bit like the Irish version of Lourdes or Medjugorje or Fatima. And the holy wells had curative properties. And of course, you could say on a scientific level, what does the water content for there, does it say contain copper or magnesium? Or so say one well, oh, great cure for arthritis. And then you go and it's a high amount of whatever you would need.
Minerals.
The minerals. So that could be one theory. But there's more than that. If people go, it's the placebo effect to a certain extent. It's the belief that...
That's a big one, yeah.
Huge, huge. And then you might say, well, how can it be holy? How can it be sacred? But if there's a place that's very peaceful and calm and is conducive to people letting go of their worries and cares and coming to that centered place, being grounded to open up to the self-belief, is that not sacred?
Yeah, and it changes the brainwave too.
Very much so. Very much so.
And then you can make something like miracles there for your own and be happy about that. Are there any holy wells here on the island?
Do you mean in the Jersey Island, in the Barra Peninsula?
Barra Peninsula.
Well, we have something quite interesting. The Cascades are on the way to Eyries. And there is a very interesting, it's called the Mains Tail Waterfall, on the other side of Hungry Hill. So they're two water, sacred sites, phenomena, as they say. As regards the wells, there's a well up the top of, when you go to out towards Leon Moor, there's an ancient fort there, and the hill beside it has a well. And the local priest organises a walk up to that every year, which is lovely because he's a man of God, and here he is bringing the parishioners, and they're up, and there's this well on the top. But what's interesting is a lot of homesteads here have a well. So the property that we're on, there is a well. And you might say, well, is it a sacred well? If it feeds humans and animals, is that not sacred in itself? So to me, I would say, well, this well, it goes down to source. So this is a piece of land where water comes from deep within the earth that has been down there for a long time. It comes up past the stones that have been there for millennia, and then it nourishes the people who are alive on the land. So that in itself, you could say, is sacred. But does it have a devotion that people go up and walk clockwise around? No. It's interesting around here, there isn't, say, a Bridget Well or a St. Bridget Well, or there isn't a St. Patrick's Well where you get in other parts of the country.
Sure, yeah.
And I think it's because the sea, the Atlantic Ocean, is so close that there's the power of that. Mami Mara, Mother Sea, is there. And Monaghan MacLear is the great god of the sea. So therefore, you could say, maybe the wells, because the wells were every homestead had one. Mm-hmm. And because the sea in itself was the powerful aspect of water. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's just a theory or not.
Could be.
But really the standing stones, the dolmens, and then the stone circles, they're Nisagart, Ura, Cashel Kelty. Mm-hmm. They would be the major sites around here. We don't have any cairns, for example, such as Newgrange. Mm-hmm. Or over in Sligo, they have an awful lot of cairns. And that could be the people who lived in this area. They had maybe a belief and the technology at that time to build particular sacred sites, mm-hmm. whereas in another part of the country they had others.
Yeah, okay.
And I think they also had the dolmens here, or what is the most important one here? What do you think? Which one is the most powerful stone site here?
That's a good question. Well, for me, the Hag of Bera stone, which is, it's an unusual shaped stone, and it is of stone that's different to what you see around. It's quite a crumbly texture. But it's what it is synonymous with, the elder woman I mentioned. The Ballycravane standing stone would have a connection with the stones over in Cailceel. But this is unusual because there are Ohm markings. Now, Ohm was the language of the trees. And the Ohm markings are, I can't remember exactly what it was, but it would be, Conall, the son of, Jameis, for example. It was a name of somebody. I think the Deireann na Sagart stone circle, and then I mentioned Cashel Kelty and Ura, because they're intact stone circles, that in itself speaks of people for millennia not touching or interfering with them in any way. Mm-hmm. So holding a respect for them. Mm-hmm. And they all have a very different energy. One you could go to has a very peaceful, another kind of stirs you up. It's a very exciting, there's a creativity about it. Another has a very healing, releasing element. But I think what's important is people come to these places with a blank canvas, that there's no preconceived notions. Mm-hmm. For example, when John and I bring people, I mentioned mm-hmm. the Americans coming next week, we might explain what a stone circle is. Mm-hmm. So this is a place of, it's a cauldron of energy. Mm-hmm. And then we'll give them time to wander around, to drop from their head to their heart and see what they feel. Mm-hmm. And then we have a group sharing. And inevitably, there are similarities in what people say. Mm-hmm. Because if we say, well, now this is sight, this is what it's about, and this is what you're going to feel, and this is...
And it's not blank, and they are more or less in that direction already.
Yes, and that's they're coming in with preconceived notions. I remember as a child in school being brought to the Hill of Tara. And the Hill of Tara was where the High Kings were crowned, but only if they revered the goddess of the land. And that, therefore, there would be fertility and abundance and harmony and peace in the land. But I remember going to this vast field with a few undulations, one stone, one cairn, and thinking, is that it? The teacher brought us there, but she told us historically what it was about. But she didn't have what it took to bring it alive. Mm-hmm. And I, as a child, well, I suppose I was a teenager at that stage, I knew there was something about it. However, a bunch of unruly schoolgirls running around a hill, we weren't quiet enough to really hear what it was about. And it was only many, many moons later that I was open to, was capable of being grounded and anchored to sit and to listen. That was the magic. That was the dru.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it can tell you a lot of things about yourself mainly, and also about what is around, and about its history sometimes.
Very much so. And I think as well, that's one of the draws here to the Beira Peninsula in particular. I love that when you ask people from the Beira Peninsula, where are they from? They'll say, you know, I'm Mary O'Sullivan from Beira, Cork, Ireland. Or, you know, I'm Paddy Harrington from Beira, Kerry, Ireland. Mm-hmm. So they'll say Beira first. And then, unusually, this peninsula, half it is in County Cork and half is in County Kerry. And yet, when you listen to the Beira accent, it's a melange of both. It's neither really Cork. It's the Cork accent they sing. So it's not that. Mm-hmm. And the Kerry can be quite guttural. So it's not that. It's in between. Mm-hmm. And because of Castletown Bear as a major fishing port where people came from all over the world, there's a lovely, how would you say, a mix of people. This part of Ireland has always, the Germans, the Dutch, the French, the Americans, Canadians, people from all over the world come here. And there's that lovely mix. So I think that in itself, and the fact that it is so remote, it takes 5 hours to get from Dublin, that you've got to really want to come here. And that kind of holds the secrets. There's more preserved in the land. It's pristine.
Mm-hmm. So if someone wants to book a tour or course with you, where can they find information?
Ah, we, during the pandemic years, had to pivot majorly and move online because our work was always in person. And one of the silver linings of that time was now we are accessible to a worldwide, particularly the diaspora, Irish who live abroad, but also those with Celtic soul who may have no Irish lineage in their background, but whose heart beats with Celtic soul. And we are on sliancree.ie, which means pathwayoftheheart.ie. So if you type in pathway of the heart, then you're going to get to us. And we offer a very simple self-paced introduction to Irish Celtic shamanism, which I think is important that if people are interested in this, they tap in and they see, do the way John and I teach, does that resonate with them? Then we have a year-long community called the Medicine Spiral. It's 4 weekends over a full year. And there's, again, self-paced work in between. It's online, live or recorded. And then eventually we have a mastery spiral, which is an advanced, and then the healer spiral, where I teach people how to be shamanic therapists. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's lots on the YouTube channel that is free. We do a podcast every month. Mm-hmm. So
what's the name of the podcast?
The podcast is Celtic Wisdom. Celtic Wisdom podcast, yeah.
And you have another one too?
Yes, I run the women's section of Sliainn Cree, which is called Moon Maná. So Maná is the Irish Gaelic for women. So we're moon women. And the reason being that for our ancestors, the moon was the symbol of the divine feminine and the sun, of course, a symbol of the divine masculine. And we meet in our lunar gatherings, again, online, live, at usually around the full moon. And I also train women to be circle facilitators, to run their own Moon Maná circle. It's such an honour and a pleasure. And of course, that's moonmaná.ie. So moonmaná.ie.
So if you want to come and visit her, she will be glad to have you there and very welcome you in her circle.
Yes, I would be very, very happy to welcome anyone online. And of course, if you're coming to the Beira Peninsula with a group, again, drop us an email. So just like those Americans and the French people, we are open to leading groups for a day or whatever might be required.
But also in the Dublin area.
Yes, we're in the Dublin area. And of course, we're so close to the Hill of Tara, the Hill of Uisnech for Cnic and the other sacred sites. So
Boyne Valley.
The Boyne Valley over Bruna Bonha, absolutely.
I have another question. What is your favourite animal and why?
Oh, gosh, that is so hard. I have a great connection with the fox. And now I am a red-haired woman. So Madra Rua, the red dog. And I love that we see foxes down here in Bear, but we see them in Dublin as well. And the way the vixen looks after her cubs. But I love the cunning, they could say, of the fox. She's a survivor. She's a wild dog. And in fact, I think foxes really are almost a cross between feline and canine. They're like cat-like dogs or dog-like cats almost. And again, in the Irish ways, the fox was always, one step ahead, a very smart animal. I also have a deep connection with swans. And the swan was very important bird, power animal, as it would be called, even though she's a bird. They often came from Iceland, so they would be 6 months in Iceland, 6 months in Ireland. So the arrival of the swans and the leaving of the swans was very important. But just like in many cultures, the stork, a white bird, a large white bird, would bring babies. Similarly, the swans were seen to bring new life, whereas the crows were the opposite, the blackbirds. They brought the souls to when they died back to source. And I am part of the wonderful Bridget's Way Celtic pilgrimage. I think some of your listeners might be familiar with the Camino to Santiago de Compostela. So in Ireland, the Saint Bridget, who's the matron saint of Ireland, but she's also the Celtic goddess of springtime, the Celtic festival Imbolc. So Bridget was reputed to be born and incarnate in Fahard in County Louth, northeast of Ireland. And then she walked past three counties all the way down to Kildare to establish her monastic city. And she was highly unusual in the 5th century that she was a very powerful woman. Mm-hmm. And she ran a jewel monastery she had men and women and children in her community, whereas usually the monks were on their own and the nuns were on their own. She was very much a woman of hospitality, of practicality. And we have co-rediscovered this 9-day pilgrimage, which is actually extended to 9, it's 12. It's growing before her eyes, like Bridget's cloak. So therefore, as the swan flew in the skies, the Cygnus constellation at the time of her life speaks of that epic flight, the flight of the soul, our souls. And can we as humans, while we're awake and alive, can we tap into the meaning of life? Mm-hmm. Are we going to go through our human life blinkered, just doing whatever? Mm-hmm. Or are we going to be open to the magnificence of our soul? Mm-hmm. That is an interesting question.
That's true. And the swan is also a symbol of the Children of Lear.
Yes, and the Children of Lear site is here on the Bear Peninsula.
Das war unser Gespräch mit Dr. Karen Ward, eine Frau, die altes Wissen mit moderner Psychologie auf faszinierende Weise verbindet. Vielleicht habt ihr beim Zuhören gespürt, wie sehr Irland nicht nur durch seine Leidenschaft, sondern auch durch seine Menschen berührt und wie lebendig die keltische Seele noch immer dort ist. Wenn ihr mehr über Karen und ihr Netzwerk erfahren wollt, findet ihr alle Links in den Shownotes. Wir freuen uns, wenn ihr diese Folge mit anderen Irland-Fans teilt, uns eine gute Bewertung dalasst oder einfach wieder vorbeihört, wenn es heißt Erlebnis Irland. Slán und bis zum nächsten Mal. Euer Chris und
deine Fee.